This week, we are thankful for Boris Beaton, the second half, and an Argos win. Hope you all enjoyed your Thanksgiving. Clap those beers. It's the Argos Fancast. You can find us at Argos Fancast or anywhere you find your friendly neighborhood podcast. Just search Argos Fancast. Joining us, as always, our resident historian from ArgoFans.com. He is the VP of Football Operations, Will Gertler, MBA.
Hi, everybody. I hope you're in as good a mood as I am after yesterday's very important win over the Hamilton Tiger Cats. You can find me on Twitter at ArgoFans, where I'm trying to persuade the people of Toronto to get behind this team. Or you can visit www.argofans.com.
You can find me at All Kinds of Clay on the Twitter and Instagram machines. And from the Double Blue Water, Sir Douglas of House Ballinger, second of his name, Lord of Section 116, Warden of the South Side, and Protector of the Realm.
Oh, man. What a meltdown that we've been seeing. It's glorious. You can find me on Twitter at DougB519. You can find my group, The Double Blue Order, on Facebook at facebook.com/DoubleBlueOrder, on Twitter at Double Blue Order, and on Instagram at The Double Blue Order. Get yourself a law firm t-shirt at doubleblueorder.ca.
And joining us as a special guest this week, he is the coach from the Argos and X's podcast, Ben Grant.
How's it going? I'm really happy to be here. You can find me at Ben_Grant, and you can find all our stuff at X'sAndArgos.com and on Twitter at X'sAndArgos. It's a pretty good mood in here, guys.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, two wins in a week, that'll make anybody happy.
Yeah, no, it's something that, as Argos fans, we haven't really had an opportunity to feel in some time. I don't know when the last time, and, you know, Will could probably tell us right away, it's probably tattooed on his arm somewhere, the last time we felt this happy about the state of the Argos, two games up on Hamilton, a game in hand on Montreal. It's a good scene. All Argos fans are walking pretty light today.
Well, 2015 was the last time I think we were three games above 500 at any point.
The Nomad season? Oh, man.
Nomad season. Yeah, because we were doing well until we became Nomads.
Yep. Yeah, and you know what? We haven't won three games in a row in a few years either. I believe we're going back somewhere to around the 100th Grey Cup season, I believe. Could be wrong about that, but...
No. 2013, we won. Remember, we went on the road. Had all that road trip to, like, Saskatchewan, Calgary, Edmonton, wherever. They won all of them, those four games.
Well, getting to the last game that we were able to witness. Going into this game... And through the first two quarters, I was fairly convinced that this show would just be one long F word. Because that's really how the first half looked. But then something clicked. And after throwing only 84 yards in the first half, McLeod Bethel Thompson Law Firm came out and threw 304 in the second half, and scoring 19 points in the fourth quarter, including the walk-off winner by Boris Beaty with no time remaining on the clock. Going through the stats, we didn't rush the ball a whole lot. AJ Ouellette was our number one rusher. Only three carries, 14 yards, and we're not going to mention anything else. Curley Gittens Jr. showed up big time. Seven catches, 105 yards. Ricky Collins added 88. Chandler Worthy added 57 and a touchdown. Devaris Daniels with a fantastic catch, 34 yards and a touchdown as well.
And of course, Boris Beattie with the 4-for-3 night or 3-for-4 night and the game winner. It was a very, very good second half. The first half wasn't great.
I think that something that occurred to me, and I don't know if everyone's willing to admit this or not, I would be interested to know how many people would have pulled McLeod Bethel Thompson at half, because I think I would have. I think I would have, and it was the wrong move. I would have, you know, I guess we don't know how that would have turned out, but clearly staying with McLeod Bethel Thompson was correct. And I think we've got to give Coach Dinwiddie some credit for that, because, yeah, I think as much as I do like the idea of, you know, giving a player the full game, it just wasn't happening. I didn't see it. I didn't see enough positive stuff. He was impacted by some drops. There were some oddly run routes in there, too. Some strange decisions that receivers seem to make on just odd reads. But there's just, you know, 80 yards passing, there was no running to speak of. I think I would have pulled the trigger and had Arbuckle in there, and good on Coach Dinwiddie for sticking with the plan. And it's not even his guy either, right? We always talk about Nick Arbuckle being Dinwiddie's guy. Well, you know, that, I don't know if that can be said anymore, because he stuck with McLeod Bethel Thompson. Good for him. And I said so to him after the game. I said, you know, social media would have pulled McLeod Bethel Thompson at halftime. You know, good for you for sticking with him.
I think that depends on the social media platform you look at, though.
Well,
I feel like, and Facebook was frothing at the mouth to get Arbuckle. Twitter, not so much.
Well, you can review my Twitter account. I was clearly wanted Nick Arbuckle into the game. I didn't think it was entirely MBT's fault. I mean, there was that really, it's a bit of an awkward throw. The Pythagorean theorem throw, as Ben described it yesterday, that, you know, got jarred loose. But I just felt, you know, with only putting 5 points on the board, he needed to try something to get a spark. And they stuck with it. And evidently, Coach Jackson and Coach Dinwiddie found something in Hamilton's coverage to start exploiting it. And you know, I don't think we really beat them deep at all. It was just a lot of, you know, intermediate passes where Argo players were able to find a hole in the zone and Ricky Collins in that yak yardage.
In other words, it's what we've been doing all year.
Yeah.
We stuck with the plan and it worked.
Yeah. They did go into the middle of the field a lot more in the second half. They were, you notice in the first half, they were really trying to connect to the, especially to the field side, to the wide side of the field on the outside. And in the second half, you saw a lot more stuff over the middle. Sometimes McLeod had to extend plays to allow time for his guys to get over to the middle of the field on longer routes and stuff. But that was a real difference that I noticed. But yeah, they weren't going deep, because most teams know the book on McLeod Bethel Thompson. They play this deep shell over top and force him to be patient, force him to check down, because the book on him is that he doesn't like doing that. And in years past, he would have just, you know, bombs away and made mistakes, thrown picks. But he's not doing that this year. His only two picks, I don't even count, because they've come on 2-point conversions, which, you know, to me, that's not real football. So it's he's got a pretty clean sheet as far as I'm concerned. Really good decision making.
Yeah, it's a free play at that point. So yeah, I wouldn't be counting them either.
You know what? I didn't think about pulling McLeod Bethel Thompson, but I mean, if I hadn't have been watching it on replay and fast forwarding through things, I probably would have been calling for Arbuckle to go in. But when you look back at it, Dinwiddie's track record is not necessarily to pull the guy right away like that. He always wants to make the adjustments and see if those adjustments work. Because I think the last time he pulled McLeod Bethel Thompson, it was, you know, somewhere into the third quarter after he had made those adjustments, and the same thing when he's pulled Arbuckle as well. It's always been after he gives them time to make those adjustments.
And that's a smart thing to do. But it's easier for us to sort of say that than in the heat of the moment, nothing's going right for you. And halftime just seems like such a natural start anew sort of period. And I think maybe one reason that he leaned towards keeping McLeod Bethel-Thompson in is just that the game hadn't gotten away. So the defense had played extremely well. I was a little frustrated with them on that first drive, the opening drive. Hamilton just walked down the field and scored a touchdown. I think it was that first drive. And then after that, they clamped down. And it was amazing. At halftime, I actually felt pretty good thinking about how poorly the Argos had played on offense. They just done nothing. And yet we're one touchdown away from a tie game. So I guess at that point, the game's not getting away from you. The defense is keeping you in it. Why not keep McLeod Bethel-Thompson in there? I just think I probably wouldn't have, and I would be wrong. And he was right.
Well, I felt it was, even though it was approximately the same score as Labor Day, except we all know what happened in that game. The Argos had a terrible third quarter. And but in this case, you know, it was a matter of Hamilton was shut out in the third quarter, I think. They didn't get that touchdown until the fourth. I think they were into the fourth at that point. And I mean, what was the Argo defense doing differently? Because I think they still gave up 300 plus yards on in the air again. And I don't think they had a lot of balls. They did knock down a lot of passes, and they did have a few interceptions go through their hands. But I think my worry was that the difference with the Montreal and Ottawa games was their quarterbacks threw some costly picks. Mazzoli was getting away with that. So my sort of worry as the game went on is the Argo defense isn't going to be able to generate the turnover that will get the offense good field position back in the game. But they persevered and the offense managed to make up for that.
After that first drive, the adjustments that I noticed from Coach Jones were he started run blitzing because he realized after that opening drive, they were just running up the middle at will, basically, not literally at the will linebacker, but like just up the middle to whoever was there. And Dexter McCoyle and Hoyt just weren't able to do much on their own. And so in that second drive, we saw a lot more heat coming from the secondary to help out a little bit. And then for some reason, Hamilton just stopped trying to run up the middle.
Yeah, I noticed that.
I didn't get that because it was working for them, not as well as when Jones wasn't blitzing, but it was still, there's still an opportunity there, but they completely abandoned that game. And Will, like you're talking about, some of those throws that Mazzoli sort of got away with, the Argos were playing that deep shell, that bend but don't break Jones defense, which I kind of hate, but it works. And so, I can't get too mad at it. But he made a couple what should have been costly mistakes. That touchdown pass to Ackland just kills me because it was over 50 yards.
Yeah.
And the coverage was good. Butler's in position, and you just never saw the ball.
Well, I kind of want to see this Chris Jones defense shut a team down. 361 yards is still a ton of yardage to give up. They only gave up 23 points, which is what you want to accomplish. But I just want to see. I still feel like the Argo defense is kind of playing with fire.
Yeah,
and it's not gonna work out every day of the week.
No, but the same thing with the Chris Jones defense. His defense has a lot of complicated schemes and different looks, and they disguise a whole lot of things, and so a Chris Jones defense takes time to implement.
Yeah,
we're seeing little bits of it, but I still think we're seeing. And Chris Jones has said it himself. He's working with the defensive scheme that these guys have been taught and trying to, make minor changes here or there. So we're still looking at Glenn Young's defense, just with a Chris Jones twist on it a little bit, and probably with a little bit of Stubler in there too.
What I understand, the Argos have not had the amount of practices the Argos have actually had under Jones is not as much as So this was a very short week, and
yep.
Yeah.
They just haven't had, there have been days, but there haven't been a lot of days on the practice field. Like this past week, there really weren't any. It was just walkthroughs. And then prior to that, there's the bye. And I don't think there's going to be any practices for the next 4 days, I believe. And then they get back to it again to tune up for Montreal. But yeah, you're right. It takes time. And I wouldn't expect there to be a true Chris Jones defense at all of this season. Because I just don't think when you're working with someone else's language, you're working with someone else's terms and philosophies, I don't think there's any one point where you just sort of switch and say, okay, now it's all my stuff starting today. It doesn't really work like that. And so he's probably going to see it out doing his kinds of things, but he's going to have to translate that language. I have taken over as an offensive coordinator mid-season for somebody else's offense, and it never, as much as I wanted it to, it never turned into my stuff. I just couldn't do it. I couldn't find a way to seamlessly do it. And so I would introduce some of my concepts, but they weren't called the same things. They weren't the same adjustments. They weren't the same hot reads or anything else. It was all the prior guy's system that I was just kind of trying to influence a little bit, but really not shake anything up too much.
Yeah, I think let's not lose fact too. Like, this team went into, you know, the toughest place they play in Hamilton on 5 days rest and won. And I think we should be really proud of the guys for pulling that out, because I think a lot of us could have just easily said, oh, 5 days rest, you know, Hamilton, easily chalk it up to 5-4, but you know, those guys played their butts off, and proud of them.
Do you guys feel like this is a pretty special team? I know that it's easy to get lost sometimes in some of the videos that you see, the social media content. But when I watch some of these videos, there just seems to be a passion that I haven't always felt from the Argos team. Now, it's easier when you're winning than when you're losing, but I love those little videos that Adam posts after the game where the guys are talking to the camera as they walk off the field. And it just seems like a tight-knit group. And my favorite video of the year is that Thanksgiving food video. I'm sure you guys saw on the Argos Twitter account where they were all asked, you know, what was your favorite one thing for Thanksgiving? And they're just so into it and they're on each other. But there seemed to be a real camaraderie and brotherhood there that you just don't always see. And I'm not sure you'd see that same thing around the league on every team. Again, winning helps. I bet you see it in Winnipeg.
Yeah.
But this team feels pretty special to me.
Yeah, I've been getting that same feeling too. Like, especially when you see, you know, if you looked at the Ottawa game, and there was a game earlier in the season too, where in the Ottawa game you saw McLeod Bethel Thompson running on the field after the pick six to congratulate everybody. You've seen McLeod Bethel Thompson literally help a defensive player off the field when he was sitting on the bench. When do you ever see a quarterback jump out there like that to do any of those things?
And
I can't name a quarterback that I've seen, you know, go and congratulate a DB in the end zone.
And let's not forget Boris Beattie having a kicking tee with, you know, number 58 on it.
Yeah.
For Jake Reinhardt and
That was some good juju, I think, that he needed.
Yeah. Now that I remember, I gotta get this in before I forget, but the guy the Argos picked up from Ottawa's practice squad, the long snapper, I thought did a pretty good job, you know, under you know, just being in camp for a couple of days. Now, do they have to return him to Ottawa, or do they have him now for the whole, because Jake's probably out the whole year. So I know Ottawa took Trevon Tate for one game, and now he's back on the Argo PR, but I must assume the Argos can keep this guy. I hope so, at least.
Yeah, my understanding of how it works is that if they have a spot for him on the active roster, that he can stay here. Now,
okay.
I don't know if that is an out of date understanding, because I know things changed a lot this year because of the taxi squad and everything else. But that's how I understand it. If he's got a permanent spot, which I think he does in Toronto, then I believe he's going to stay.
Yeah. Oh, we need him. Well, they need him.
It felt pretty good not to have a punt blocked yesterday.
Yes.
It did. But they did get through to, I think they did get almost, they almost got through a couple times.
The first two punts, the first one, there were two guys that came through. The second one, there was one guy that came through, but then it was clean the rest of the day. It was actually a pretty good day for special teams. Everyone else stepped up. There was the stop of the trick play that Hamilton ran out of punt formation. It was just so weird. And then Boris Beattie's winning field goal at the end, a couple booming punts of over 60 yards. So special teams were great. I still wish I wasn't biting my nails every time the Argos line up in punt formation. I would like to see a whole game where nobody comes flying through and I'm not closing my eyes at the last second.
We know Jeff Reinbold loves to do that stuff. So, I mean, but he didn't do a good job disguising it. You could tell before the play was snapped, they were the Argos. Yeah. You got, and I think on your show, Ben, you had that chalked up as probably one of the turning points because they were, Ticats were driving at that point. And
yeah, it didn't directly lead into an Argos score, but it did shift the momentum and it certainly shifted field position. They were just on the Argos side of the field. And they could have pinned the Argos way deep. The Argos still hadn't got anything going at that point. It was still, I think it was second quarter, late second quarter. They ended up getting that field goal at the end of the half. And that came off of the imbalance in field position over those next few drives that came out of that fake punt. And Hamilton just never, they didn't really have the momentum anymore after that. Even though they did score in the third quarter and they did widen the lead, it didn't feel out of reach, and I think they really could have put that game away if they'd been able to capitalize on a short field after that drive or go for it. Like, that's what JB was saying on our podcast. He's like, if you're going to run a fake punt, why don't you just go for it? Put your offense out there. They were moving the ball, fairly well. Yeah. If you're going to go for it, go for it.
They did. They let Mazzoli run a little bit more than they did in the previous game, but to Ben's point, as you said earlier, Malik Irons cutting through that Argo defense like butter. And you're right, they sort of went away from it pretty quickly. And
if you look at the stats, Malik Irons had 59 yards, an 8.4 yard average, and a long of 20, but he only had 7 carries.
But I'd love to know how much of that was the Ticats rushed for, I think, 110 yards. I think I have it added up to. I wonder how much of that was for, first half yardage.
Yeah.
But I do want to bring up. I think we can all agree that over the past 2 weeks with John White out, DJ Foster just doesn't seem like the same threat like he was before. Now Hamilton does have a very good rush defense, but even against Ottawa, he had only about three yards a carry, and he did have that touchdown. But yesterday, 7 yards on 7 carries. He did have 4 catches for 41 yards, which is nice, but I think it was smart that they tried to get AJ Ouellette into the lineup because I thought they needed somebody to spell off Foster. But I'm certainly hoping down the stretch that John White's going to be healthy to give us that 1-2 punch back.
It certainly seems like DJ Foster is far more comfortable in the supporting role in the backfield, and he's a great receiver. And that seems to be how he's best used, where he can run the ball in passing situations, not necessarily in running situations, and then be used as a receiver out of the backfield. Both he and White are pretty good in pass protection, but I think they make a sort of perfect marriage in the backfield when you have both of those guys, which is strange because they sort of look like similar runners. Neither of them is massive. They're both sort of quick on their feet. And yet they do have kind of a different skill set. I think we forget sometimes because they do both look like that sort of, second and long scat back guy to the backfield. But John White, I got to tip my hat to him. He's a really good every down runner. And he really does make the difference in Foster's game, you know, when you switch from one to the other. So, yeah, I think we learned an important lesson here, because I was getting ready to crown Foster and sort of suggest he might be the lead back. I hadn't given up on White by any means, but I really like the explosiveness that we saw out of Foster in those few games. I was excited to see him take on a starring role, but that hasn't at all gone the way I thought it would.
Yeah, as I think you and JB pointed out on your show, the Argos, you know, were trying to really run on first down there, and it just wasn't working. And, you know, I was glad that they finally went away from it. And just, so how many pass attempts does MB know? What was it? How many pass attempts did MBT have in the first half?
Oh,
it couldn't have been that many, because he ended up with 42. So that's,
yeah, he went almost, like, he was pretty close to perfect in the second half.
Yeah, I think at one point he was like 17 to 19 or something.
Yeah. Yeah, but, I mean, he did throw quite a bit in the first half. It was just all short, really short.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and, you know, obviously only 84 yards in that. But, yeah, I can't remember what it was, but I think the majority of it, but not as much as, I mean, maybe a little bit less than two thirds came in the second half. He had pretty close to I think it was 17 or 19 attempts in the first half.
I think I counted 15.
So it's more than I thought.
Yeah, you just, I mean, when you look at the yardage, you don't think that, you know, that's the kind of outcome you're going to have from the passing. But he was like 50% in the first half.
Yeah.
It was not good. It was really not good.
It was interesting in the postgame press conference to hear Coach Dinwiddie openly say that he decided to abandon the run game, because you don't often hear coaches speak that way. But when asked about it yesterday, he said, you know, he wanted to, going at halftime, he wanted to get back to establishing the run. They tried a couple running plays early in the third quarter, and then he basically is like, you know what, we're not going to run the ball anymore because it's just not there. And I think so many coaches would have kept pounding away that sort of old school mentality of, you know, this is our style of football, and we're going to go down playing our style of football. And good for him for not succumbing to that and just saying, yeah, let's just throw. And as you saw, that was all that happened in the second half, is throw right until the very end of the game.
Well, the Argos at one point, I think it's on their second drive of the third quarter, I remember, Willette ran for 8 yards on first down, and I knew what was going to happen. Second and two, they were going to run it again and get stuffed, and that's what happened. And I think that's finally when he decided to go away from it.
Yeah, and I like that. He's a really refreshing coach to hear speak, because he's not too proud at any point. He's really comfortable in his own skin, and he will say quite openly when he made a mistake, or when he's second guessing himself, or when he just changed his mind on something. And I just don't think you see a lot of that. There's so much ego in coaching football, and that's not something I've ever gotten from Coach Dinwiddie. And I think it's awesome. I love cheering for a coach like that.
Yeah. And they stayed out of the penalty box too, which we've been lamenting on the road. They were not able to do that prior to today, but I thought they did a good job. I mean, Jamal Campbell had a few unfortunate, and again, two illegal procedures on one drive, but really they weren't taking those 15 yard rough play penalties. And that may be a good way to segue into the topic of some of the quote unquote controversial calls that,
well, but before we get to that, no, I got to go talk about the penalties, because I was seriously upset at the amount of penalties that they took. That, I mean, are still things that you don't need to take. Like, I mean, all of the offensive penalties they took were offside or illegal procedure calls. You know, they took a few of those on defense as well, and some of them were just timing, but, like, you know, 11 penalties, 6 on offense. Yeah, 11 for 105. Okay. We had two special teams penalties, totaling 25 yards, but, you know, 6 on offense for 30 yards, those are all five-yard penalties. Yeah. So, you know, that's all stuff that is really correctable.
Okay. There was a stretch in the first half, too, where there were 3 in a row. I think one of them wasn't accepted just because Toronto was already moved so far back. It was, I think it was 1st and 20 off of 2 false starts or procedure calls, sorry. And, it felt like here we go again.
Yeah, then it was, I think, a holding call that they declined, and then it was because it was an incomplete pass anyway, so.
Yeah.
Well, I stand corrected on the penalties. I didn't realize it was that high, but, it didn't. Obviously, in the end, it didn't make as huge of a.
No.
Yeah.
Maybe we're desensitized to it after so many road games with so many flags. It's like, 11 penalties. That's pretty good.
That's entirely possible, actually. Perfectly honest. Yeah. We only got 100 yards in penalties. Oh, that's not so bad.
I think that noticing that stuff comes with, I was watching the game by myself, so I was able to, make my mental notes. Whereas normally, if I'm watching the game, I've got one or both of my kids watching with me. Usually have my dad as well. So there's chatter going back and forth throughout the game. But when you're watching by yourself, you can pick out those little things like that.
Now, Clay, just before when you watch the game on DVR or whatever, were you able to keep the result a secret or?
So, I had a feeling because I had a few people say, I know what the score is. And just the way they said it, because they know if I'm recording a game, I don't want to know anything.
Yeah.
But I've gotten to, I've gotten to know when somebody tells me that they know the final score, just based on the way they say I know the final score, I can usually tell whether or not it was an Argos win or not. There was a part of me at some point was like, okay, is this feeling wrong? Cause this really does not feel like they're going to win this game. And then in the fourth quarter, the third quarter started to pick up, and fourth quarter's like, they were right. They didn't lie to me.
It's one of my pet peeves. One of my pet peeves is people that don't know how to not tell somebody the score when they've recorded a game. Because like you're saying, they're telling you. They're already telling you the result by the way that they're saying it. As soon as you find out that someone has recorded a game, you go silent. The topic is finished. Don't address it again. It drives me crazy. People that say, well, I think you'll find the fourth quarter pretty interesting. No, don't say anything. Just nod your head and then change the topic.
Yeah, it's same thing with me. It's like not necessarily when I'm recording a game, but if I'm missing, say, an episode of AEW Dynamite, I don't want Nick texting me telling me what happened during the show.
He probably does too, does
it? Yeah, he does, but it's usually after I've seen it.
Oh.
But sometimes I'll tell him explicitly, dude, if you tell me what's going on, I'm going to strangle you next time I see you at a game. Or I'm going to slap you or something along those lines. And he's like, okay, I won't tell you.
I flat out told a few people, like, okay, don't tell, my son Curtis cannot keep the secret. And he would be one of those, you like this. Oh, yeah, I think you'll be happy. You won't want to watch, So I told, don't tell him.
I don't.
And he found out after he was away from me, so I couldn't see his reaction. But, for the most part, they tried to keep it deadpan. And anytime anybody brought up the game, like, I'm recording it, don't tell me anything.
So, those controversial calls.
Alleged.
I don't know if everybody remembers the last time the Argos won at Tim Hortons Field in the regular season. Well, the only other time. It was 2017 when Ricky Ray was still playing and the Argos had a comeback and won in overtime. But you remember there was also controversy over a few calls in that game, like an offside or something, and all this other stuff. So there were a couple. There was what I'd say three or four plays in this game that people are finding a little bit questionable. Or so the first was the field goal at the end of the first half. So Beattie hooked it.
And from the camera angle, it appeared it to go wide.
Yes. Wide to the left. To the left, I guess. Well, the way they're facing. Yeah. But no, it counted. So 12-5.
They did look at the other camera angle that was behind.
Yep.
And it did appear to go right over top of the upright.
It was like one of those old Hank Lissick when he used to kick field goals. Things would just tower over the up. Yeah. Like they wouldn't go through the uprights. They'd go like 10 feet above them. Then there was the.
Oh, before we jump to the next one, though, you know, for all these people claiming that we cheated, we paid off the refs, I'd like to remind them that we have this thing called a control room review. And there's something that they say almost three or four times a game, at least. Every scoring play is reviewed. If it didn't go over, or there was irrefutable evidence that it didn't go through the uprights, I think they would have said something.
Yeah, there's even like, just to look at it from a logical standpoint, suppose the refs, you know, were paid off, and there's, you know, they're in cahoots with the Argos, and obviously this isn't true, this didn't happen, but suppose that were the case, would you really allow Hamilton to be first in goal for what was probably going to be the winning touchdown at the end of the game? You're never going to allow that scenario to occur. So anyone claiming that there's funny business going on, the funny business that went on was Hamilton not being able to score inside the 10-yard line when they needed to. The game was on the line. A touchdown would have probably put it away, and the Argos stopped them. And there's nothing to do with the referees there. The referees, if anything, got them down there because of that pass interference call, which was really, really tight. Like, I did think it was pass interference, but I know JB sitting next to me swore up and down that it wasn't pass interference. I didn't think it was live. I wouldn't have called it if I were refereeing that play. I wouldn't have thrown a flag. Watching the replay, I saw it. And so, again, if there's some big conspiracy, then they're not going to call that. They're not going to allow it to come down to that. So there's any talk of conspiracy is just nonsense. And as far as the field goal goes, the linesman calling it is right underneath the post. There's nobody that has an angle like that. He is looking straight up, and it is very easy when all you've got is a giant post to see if the ball goes to the right of it, to the left of it, or right over top. And I just don't think there's any way he missed the call. It does look on the TV angle, that one TV angle, it really does look like it missed, but there's just no way.
And of course, the other one was the interception that was turned back by the roughing the passer. Now, in stadium, it didn't seem so, like the angle they showed on the Jumbotron there, it didn't seem like it would be reversed. And of course, nobody really knew what was going on either, because they never said at any point, well, I guess it was a turnover, so it was reviewed, but you know, they never told us that, oh, they were looking at whether it was roughing the passer. So, and that was, and they went down and scored on that drive. But you know, when you watch the replay, yeah, it was a helmet like into his chin, I think, right?
Yep.
So, you know, that's
And that portion of the rule book is now black and white. So if that helmet touches that chin, and I say touches because, I mean, it wasn't a hard hit to the chin, but it did hit the chin. Yeah. You know, that's going to be called, and based on the rule book, that's called every single time.
Yeah, whether you like it or not, yep, they're protecting that quarterback.
Was that a challenge from Coach Dinwiddie, or was that from the control center? That was a challenge. That was okay. Yeah, I wasn't positive about that, but you saw in the replay, you saw McLeod Bethel-Thompson lying on the ground. Like he spent a lot of time on the turf. I think we do have to at some point tip our hats to just how tough a game he played. He took hit after hit standing in the pocket, but you see him on that play lying on the turf. His chin strap is like over his nose, and there's not a lot of ways that that's going to happen that don't involve someone hitting your face mask with their helmet, and that's what occurred on that play, I think.
And I think that, I mean, the same thing, you know, that where the rule is black and white there was the same one as that pass interference call that you talked about earlier. You know, when the minute that you even have a little bit of a grab or adjust that one shoulder, that's going to be called. And, you know, like live, because I yelled at my TV, that was bullshit, but. When I saw the replay, okay, fine. Like, I don't know how they saw that live, but, you know.
Well, no one saw it live. Yeah, it was, there was no chance. I think one of the Hamilton coaches up in the booth is watching the replay of it. And it's like, hang on a second. I think, and it was such a big moment that it's probably worth the risk. And he does, I think he prevents him from jumping. Like, to me, that was what it was. Like, Deku's coverage, I thought, looked really good. But when you see it really slowed down, and it just seems so unfair on a defender. It's such a tough job anyway, and you're flagged for so many different things. But he does kind of get his hand over top of the shoulder pad, prevents Ungerer from really lifting off. Now, I don't know if it makes a difference on that play or not, but technically it's a penalty. Now, were you guys hearing it about a holding call on that Deveris Daniels touchdown? Because I received a lot of angry DMs with still photos of people's TV screens of what appeared to be Campbell and Richards holding some poor Hamilton lineman on that Deveris Daniels touchdown pass. But to me, in these random still shots that I got, and I did go back and watch it, and I see what people are saying, but to me, the ball was already gone. And so at that point, you're not looking for holding anymore.
Is, you know, one of the cheap John Madden quotes in Madden 2004 is there's holding on every play. It just depends if the ref decides to call it.
Yep. And I think if you go back and watch almost every play, you could probably find, like, I mean, we all watch the games go and start yelling at that was holding. Mm-hmm. Right. I know I'm not the only one. And. Like, it's, you know, as of, there's that one thing that you hear, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. Right. And, you know, I remember playing as an offensive lineman that, you know, unless you're grabbing around the shoulders, you could still kind of grab right underneath the pads. As long as it, you know, didn't look like you were holding the jersey, but, you know, it's just a minute. Once you grab around the shoulders is when they usually call it. And there was always something going on, you know, and it's really whether it affects the play or not. Most times, whether they're going to call it.
We haven't even talked about that catch.
There were three terrific catches in this game that I feel like a segment of the show needs to be dedicated to.
Deveris, like, he just walked, you know, to you know, he's jumped. It was tight coverage. He jumps up. He kind of does a, I don't know what degree it was, but, you know, to get both feet in bounds was, he got both feet in bounds too. I don't think he, and I didn't realize that at first, but that was spectacular. But the other one too is, that third down throw to Brissett in the last drive, that was a tough catch too. I mean, he could easily, you know, to trap the ball or, you know, to get that ball from hitting the turf, that was also something that really needs to be appreciated as well.
And that let's not forget Gittens Jr. getting, like, drilled in the spleen on that post route where he hung on to the ball.
And he hung on this time,
Yeah.
Absolutely clutch catches that we got from our receivers. Absolutely clutch.
That Deveris Daniels catch, there's a moment in it. I was watching it frame by frame because I was trying to hunt down. There's the broadcast of the game, I know, had one shot where there's the sunset in the background as he's catching the ball. And so I went on my rewatch that I just wanted to find a still frame of that. And I ended up getting one. But watching that sort of frame by frame, there's a great moment. If you get a chance to go back, even you can even see it on the video clip that the Argos posted on their Twitter account. It's a moment where Deveris, while he is doing his full 360 pirouette and catching a ball in very tight coverage from Brooks, he actually looks down. His foot is going to land out of bounds, and he has the wherewithal to not only catch the ball while spinning a full 360, he looks down at the ground, sees where the sideline is, and tucks in his foot so that his toes tap in bounds. It's the most amazing athletic play. It's even more impressive frame by frame than it was full speed, which was impressive enough.
Catch of the year candidate?
For an Argo catch, no question.
Hey, well, I'm actually looking at it now again. Brooks really doesn't, I mean, the coverage is tight, but Brooks doesn't know, he doesn't quite know where the ball is, I don't think.
Because I don't think there's any way in his mind he thought McLeod would throw to him because he's blanketed.
And they're you know, headed right towards the corner.
Yeah.
You know, at that point, then it's like, okay, he's going to run out of room here.
And then how about McLeod's throw off his back foot? How do you make a pass like that that only your guy can go and get? Oh, it was amazing. Everything about that play was awesome.
Okay, Dunnigan was the color commentator on the game, and on every other pass that he threw, he's like, "And he's throwing flat footed. He's throwing off the back foot. How strong is this guy's arm?" You know, he was just marveling it. And this is Dunnigan, who could probably throw a football through a concrete wall. You know, and he's marveling at how hard of a ball that McLeod Bethel-Thompson is throwing, or how strong his arm is. It was when he started pointing those things out is when I started noticing. I'm like, holy cow, how far could he throw if he actually stepped into it?
And can we talk about that the catch that Doug brought up, the Brissett catch at the end of the game to convert that third down, that one reception on the stat sheet? You look at the stats, and that is maybe the biggest play of the entire game, one reception for 13 yards. So some cool stuff that was going on that play. Remember the play by four, Damien Jean-Pierre was injured. And so Brissett wasn't even supposed to be on the field, but Jean-Pierre goes down, Brissett comes in. Coach Dinwiddie said it's a position that Brissett has not repped at all. It's the W position, the number two to the boundary side, the position that Eric Rogers normally plays. And so Brissett is in there. The play call, the primary reads are actually on the field side. They had been seeing soft coverage from the field side halfback all game, and they thought for sure that was where they were going to be able to get a easy conversion for the first down. But it wasn't the look that they were anticipating. So McLeod, while under pressure, I think there's even someone holding onto his waist or his leg, somehow pivots back to the boundary side, sees Brissett, and it's not like he's wide open. There are guys all over the place, but there's this narrow window. And McLeod, just using only his arm because his body is being held, he just whips it towards Brissett. And like you guys said, to be able to get your arms underneath that, I thought for sure, I was saying, you know, get up there, snap it quickly, because I thought there was no way that wasn't a trapped ball. Because we've seen that so many times before, where a throw that looks exactly like that gets trapped. But sure enough, he caught it.
Well, the Hamilton defensive end has his hand around McLeod's waist, but I think I'm just trying to wait for this play to replay here, because I wanted to see do it at normal speed. Yeah, Dejon Allen gets it's the defensive tackle who comes through, but I think he doesn't get a clean, I want to say it's not a clean shot, but he falls, so he doesn't quite get the same momentum he otherwise might. But
and after our first half with so many drop balls that we saw from the receivers, they came back in the second half with it's just amazing catches. So, you know, good for them for turning it around.
And, you know, you brought it up before the show, Ben. We have to take a look at, you know, where the Toronto Argonauts have now positioned themselves as far mm-hmm. as the playoffs coming up. Because, I mean, we're 9 games in of a 14-game season. We've got 5 games left, and we're now 4 points clear of Hamilton and Montreal.
Yeah. Yep. So now I'm just call up the standings and the.
I got them right in front of me.
Okay, so the Argos are on a bye this week. Mm-hmm. So is Hamilton, mm-hmm. but Montreal is not. Okay, so Montreal has played one less game than I thought they had played. So they're actually at 500. I didn't realize this. I thought they were 4-5.
No, they're 500, yeah.
They do get Ottawa in Ottawa, so you got to think they're going to go 5-4 here. But
at the same time, too,
yeah.
You know, you got to look at what Montreal's
– yeah. You
know, the news that come out of Montreal with Vernon Adams,
yeah.
Being put on the 6th game. I mean, unless he's coming back early, you're looking at playoffs before he's healthy.
And I think that they're probably going to see what Matthew
Schiltz,
whatever Schiltz is a beer, what he can do.
I would prefer to call him Schiltz just on the show.
He's been in the league a long time, so they'll want to see what he can do starting. And, you know, it's a good if you're going to do it, you might as well do it against Ottawa. So I don't like the Red Blacks, obviously, but I'm going to be rooting for them to beat Montreal. Yeah. So the Argos' next game is in Montreal. Now, that's always a tough place for the Argos to play as well.
Mm-hmm.
I feel pretty good that they will have at least a week of film to watch.
Yeah.
Because the Argos have been lucky, and I feel like there have been years in the past where the Argos have been burned by new quarterbacks coming in that no one has seen play, and they just throw all over the Argonauts defense. There's been some good luck this year. The Ottawa QB got to take it out on Edmonton first, and then Toronto pretty much shut him down. And here again, with the replacement QB in Montreal, it's a little bit different because he's been around longer. There's a little bit more of a book, but it'll be nice to see him play a full game against Ottawa. And maybe Ottawa can take it this time. They were so close this past week. I thought for sure that was going to result in an Ottawa win, but you can never bet on the Red Blacks.
I wouldn't be. That's for sure.
Well, because you know, Ottawa. Hamilton gets Ottawa the day after we play Montreal. So, again, but then Hamilton gets to travel out to Edmonton. So,
so they got like cupcakes for the next 2 weeks.
But Toronto has that coming back as well. Like Toronto gets to host Edmonton late in the year. Mm-hmm. There's another game against Ottawa coming up as well on the schedule. Yeah. So it's and then there's that head to head with Hamilton, which is a real opportunity to just knock them right out. And wouldn't that be awesome to win that game again, to take 3 out of 4 against Hamilton after when the schedule came out and there's so much panic about how difficult it looked, yours truly included, mm-hmm. was very worried about those 4 games against Hamilton, 2 games against the Bombers. Mm-hmm. There could be a scenario at the end of the year where it's a split against the Bombers, maybe the only team to beat the Bombers all regular season, and maybe they take 3 of 4 from Hamilton and maybe knock them right out of the playoffs. Who knows?
It would be very nice.
Oh, that would – I would never let them hear the end of it if it happened. Never. They would never hear the end of it, just like how I never tell them – never let them forget about 48-0. Never let them forget it.
Well, speaking about rubbing it in and betting, it is time for the world's greatest fantasy and pick'em advice when it comes to the CFL. Hey, you know what? Using McLeod Bethel-Thompson last week in fantasy did pay out for me. 106 points. My highest fantasy week in, I think, ever.
Damn. Damn it. I breached 100 this week.
So did I. My mistake was taking Declan Cross.
And I made a couple of mistakes too, but that's because I was already up to the cap anyway with some of the players I picked. So it's like, what could I do really?
Well, I kind of went all in on a couple guys who were playing two games that week. I had McLeod Bethel Thompson, who put up 36 points. DJ Foster put up 34 points for me, and Devontae Dedmon put up 22.
Yeah, me. I went with DJ Foster and Curly Gittens out of the Argos.
Yeah, let's see.
I put DJ in the flex spot because I know that's the way they've been using him. So
I ended up with McLeod. Well, both MBT and Foster were good picks. So was Chandler Worthy. Damien Jean-Pierre didn't have as good of a game. He got a touchdown, but he really was quieter in the yesterday.
Yep.
Yeah. This week.
And it would have helped if you would have picked the Argos defense like you told everybody to pick.
I didn't. I didn't have enough money, as it turns out.
Now, as far as this week goes, we've got we're another three game week. You kind of really have to search to try and find a combination of players that you can get that are worth the money.
I waited to see if William Stanback is going to be healthy, because that his backup looked good and he's $5,000. So, but how can you not load up on Winnipeg Blue Bombers this week?
That Elks team is falling apart at the seams.
I know, and it's
they're a rotting corpse that we've already shot.
And I had them maybe with finishing first in the West, the beginning of the year, and
nope.
Whenever I read
another story out of Edmonton, I'm thinking to myself, good Lord, this is like when I go hunting in Red Dead Redemption 2, kill an elk, skin it, leave it on the side of the road, and then as I pass by it, the corpse just rots every time I pass by it. And it's like,
you know what though? The Moss family came out and denied that story. I mean, what?
Yeah.
As much as I don't want to defend Brock Sunderland, but what incentive do they have at this point to do that? You know what I mean?
But it's just such a mess. Like, even the fact that story is even out there just speaks to the dysfunction that is going on in that organization. And you've got players that are speaking out, there's a little bit of poking from other players. Like, I know Derek Dennis has been sort of quietly fanning the flames a little bit.
Been very quiet.
Well, I guess it hasn't
he's taking a flamethrower there, Ben. Let's get realistic here.
That's true, but it's just everything they have done has been wrong. Going back to the start of the season, it just feels like every decision they've made has somehow backfired on them. And whether we're talking about COVID, or whether you're talking about in-stadium decisions, or whether you're talking about player personnel decisions. And now you start looking at coaching hires and stuff too. I really liked Coach Elizondo coming into the season. I thought he did some really cool stuff in Ottawa. But I don't know. I would expect to see a ton of changes after the season is done. I think they're going to have to almost clear house and start again, because it is a disaster. And now I guess Trevor Harris is being benched, and they're going to go to war with Prukop and
Cornelius.
And Cornelius, Mr. Strongarm.
And that adds to a little bit of a twist to the Montreal thing. Does Montreal make a play to try and get Trevor Harris? I don't think it's out of the realm of impossibility.
No, it's not.
I expect them to make a play for a quarterback. There are a few interesting options. Trevor Harris is really interesting. I think Antonio Pipkin may be interesting. I don't think there's any world in which Toronto wants to see that happen, though.
No. Oh, no.
somebody throughout Jonathan.
As much as you went and the CFL has decided that, okay, now you can only carry two quarterbacks on your active roster. Yeah. You need three quarterbacks. You, like, one goes down.
Yeah, you need, I don't.
You know, we can't have a, I mean, we can't have another one where, you know, we're going through and trying to figure, okay, who played quarterback in high school?
Yeah, I mean, Ottawa already had that situation, didn't they? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Nate Behar had to play.
But what if they make you an offer that you can refuse?
Okay, that was a frightening good impression.
That was a good Don Corleone impression.
I don't know. So what if they come at you with something that you just can't turn down? You're not even dressing Antonio Pipkin at this point. I agree. Like, I'm just playing devil's advocate here. I don't think there's any world in which you help Montreal in the least. They're the only team really on our heels at the moment, which it's sort of misleading, but I don't think you even entertain that discussion. But yeah, I do expect them to get someone. If this game in Ottawa doesn't go well this week,
mm-hmm.
I think they'll make a move.
I think somebody threw Jonathan Jennings' name out there simply because he played best when Kahari Jones was his coach in BC. But
I heard Kevin Glenn's name get thrown out.
Oh, well, Kevin Glenn's isn't he 40 years old now?
Hey, Tom Brady's still going, and he's pushing 45.
Yeah.
So the paperwork says.
Mm.
Well, they're going to, you know, they'll want to see what Schultz does and then go from there. But
I think that would be the best course of action, but that depends on what Danny Maciocia, who's in charge there. It depends on what he wants to do.
Now, the game I'm interested in is Calgary and BC on, I believe it's Saturday.
Yeah, Saturday at 7. Yeah, that's game of the week right there. That's game of the week.
You know, I think Calgary jumps into, they win, they'll jump into that third spot in the West. And, you know, they beat Saskatchewan twice. And I'm still not sure where Bo Levi Mitchell's head is at, but... you know, and BC did not look good against the Bombers, but besides the Argos in that one game, who has? BC, I just don't know what to make of them still, because they beat Ottawa twice. They beat Calgary on the road, which was impressive, but Calgary was, you know, imploding at the beginning of the year. I don't know.
After we beat them.
Yeah. I mean.
BC is a pretty different looking team without Lucky Whitehead. And
Brian Burnham.
Yeah, it's. I think that, yeah, Brian Burnham is amazing. But I think without Lucky Whitehead, just that speed that you had to account for. Because it wasn't just speed. He was a gifted player. And he was having such a great year. And really opened up the field for every other player on that team. And so when he went down, you saw, like, in that game, it was over. As soon as Lucky Whitehead came out, it was done.
And it looks like Calgary is going to have to, you know, they're not going to have Jake Meyer I don't think they're going to have him as insurance this week, because he got placed on the COVID mm-hmm. protocol list. So it's bow or bust, I guess, in Calgary.
Pretty much.
Unless Huff has got another card up his sleeve somewhere.
Who's the, I guess Michael O'Connor's
Michael
still there,
O'Connor
isn't
he? Is the only other guy, yeah.
Yeah.
I would love for him to get a shot. I just feel like he's been so hard done by. How many times this year have we thought, oh, here we go, this is going to be his chance?
Yeah. It's like he's in, and it's like, nope. It's like, damn.
Yeah, you're kind of wondering whether it's, you know, the a little bit of the Canadian quarterback bias, but I mean, when you look at, okay, Dave Dickinson and stuff, he doesn't seem to have, you know, he's going to put in the guy who's playing better. He's not going to have much bias to where your passport's from. So you almost kind of got to think, okay, maybe he's not quite picking things up as quickly as they expect, but just quick enough to be able to keep a roster spot.
Yeah, I don't think there's a bias going on there. I see it the same way, too. Like, between he and Dakota Prukop in Toronto, I thought Prukop was by far the better quarterback. Now, that isn't how that worked out when they were both on the same roster again in Calgary. They obviously didn't feel that. But I just haven't seen from Michael O'Connor. I'm cheering for him. I really want to see him out there, and I really want for him to succeed. I always feel that way about a Canadian quarterback. I haven't seen it yet. And, you know, I like you, I don't think Calgary is an organization that is going to keep their best player at any position on the bench for any reason.
No. And they won't care at all whether you're Canadian or American. The only time they care if you're Canadian or American is if, you know, they happen to have of your 24 starters, they need 7 of them to be Canadian.
Yeah.
That's the only time that comes into play. And normally they stack up at the positions where they're going to say, okay, well, this is going to be our Canadian position. Or, you know, they just.
Yeah. I only smile because there's this guy who's been on Argo Fans and 13thman.com for even the old CFL, you know, way back when it was like a Yahoo chat thing. And this guy just the same post for 30 years. There's conspiracy against Canadian players in the league. You know, they're only specific positions and the good old boy network, you know, coaches and all this stuff. It's just like, it doesn't.
Like, honestly, the only position now that you can say is, you know, you can, quarterback would be the only position that you could even put in that conversation.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, Michael O'Connor's been in the league for, you know, several years now.
Mm-hmm.
Nathan O'Rourke is got the backup job guaranteed in BC.
Yeah.
And, you know, they did start him at one point. I don't, you know, like, okay. Offensive line has always been, you know, a Canadian thing.
Yeah.
You know, safety. Now we're seeing, you know, great Canadians at cornerback now. So, you know, a lot of the safeties are becoming American because there's a better Canadian at cornerback. You know, for a long time, you only had the token receivers as Canadians. Now, you know, you can have, at times, you only have one American receiver. Running back used to be one of those token American spots, and you've got a Canadian in Winnipeg, you've got Canadians in Hamilton. You know, you've got Canadians at every place. So any of that conspiracy stuff is just
it's garbage. It's garbage. It's like,
yeah, I mean, it always was, and it is it still is. Now, Ben, since we've kind of veered off track a little bit on fantasy, is there anybody that you would look at to slot on your lineup?
Honestly, I am the worst for fantasy advice. I like to deflect and just throw you guys under the bus. I don't play CFL fantasy because I know that it would only make me angry. I think the wise thing to do this week is you load up on as many bombers as you can afford. And then with your remaining money, whatever it is, you know, try and pick out a few Alouettes to go with. I think you probably stay miles away from that Calgary BC game just because I have no idea how that's going to go. But it's been a pretty proven formula that if you can dress anyone going up against the Elks or the Red Blacks, you're in a pretty good spot. And I think with only 3 games to choose from, I think that's sort of where you go this week. So my advice would be, spend all your money on bombers and Alouettes and, you know, pick and choose where you can with whatever money you have left.
All right.
Moving on to
the Pick'em games. We start off the week in Edmonton with the Blue Bombers visiting the Elks. Line is 14.5.
That's flattering.
Yeah. I might even tease that line up to 16, 17, and take the Bombers. But I mean, obviously, I'm taking the Bombers in this. Ben, who are you taking?
Yeah, I think it's an easy Bombers win. The line got as high as 10, I think, for the last game that was in Winnipeg. I think that's where it ended up posting.
Yeah, it did.
And I was looking at that line. I'm like, what am I missing here? Is there something? Was there an injury I haven't heard about? And now you look at this line. It's that's the same two teams minus Trevor Harris with, you know, the dysfunction that's going on that we've already addressed in Edmonton. I'm wrong all the time, but I can't see any way that Edmonton wins this game. I don't think there's even a question about it.
No, I'm pretty confident in Winnipeg. I find when they have these, sometimes they have these lopsided point spreads, the team ends up covering in the end. But they're gonna have Winnipeg already has a couple weeks of film on Cornelius, so probably don't need it anyways. But
I have a feeling they're gonna be giving the ball a lot to James Wilder in that game, and part of me is gonna be very happy when he gets stuffed and made to look bad. Doug?
Oh, Bombers all the way. I'm thinking it's gonna be by at least 3 touchdowns. By 21. It's not even gonna be a contest.
If that they're was gonna the go line, 9 and if the line came out at like 19.5 or 20, it's not like you would be like, oh, Edmonton. I don't think anyone would say that, right? And so the line at 14, I don't think there's much question there. Because like Doug's saying, would you be stunned if this was 40-3 as a final? It wouldn't really shock you, would it?
Wait, no. Winnipeg's been playing? No, that's not a shock at all. It's gonna be like a U.S. It's gonna be like an NCAA game here.
Well, are we gonna have the get Elizondo and Sunderland fired game? You know, similar to the 55-8 debacle the Argos had, you know, 2 years ago that got Jim Popp fired. I mean, it's just days of our Eskimos. Swear jar right now.
Swear jar.
Yeah.
All right. And Saturday, we've got a doubleheader. We start off in the late afternoon game, Montreal in Ottawa.
Yeah.
Montreal by 4.5 points. Will, I'll let you start on this one.
I think, obviously, a Montreal loss would be ideal just to keep them off our heels. But the Red Blacks just aren't getting that ball into the end zone. Mind you, this is their first home game back since his debut, so you know, maybe Ottawa catches them, Montreal sleeping. You never know.
All right,
Greg. I think Ottawa's certainly capable of covering that 4.5 points, but I'll take the Red Blacks.
All right, Doug, where's your money?
Let's see here. Montreal and Ottawa, 4.5. Montreal's 4.5. Hart wants Ottawa to win. And depending on the quarterback situation, I might take a risk here and take Ottawa.
And Ben, where are you putting your money?
I think Montreal wins. I think Ottawa covers. I think it's going to be a field goal game at the end, and I expect Ottawa to have their hearts broken, as it seems to have happened a few times this year. But yeah, I see another painful loss. It's going to come right down to the wire. Montreal kicks a field goal for the win. Ottawa covers.
I am picking Ottawa, and if you know, if I looked at this game 2 days ago, I would have said Montreal by a landslide, but I don't think Montreal is nearly the same team without Vernon Adams behind center. And I think that's going to play a big factor in this game. So I'm picking Ottawa to win.
Well, Stand back is back.
Yeah, that's but it's the same. Gonna, yeah.
We don't know. Yeah.
And then we've obviously got the game of the week, Calgary and BC.
Mm-hmm.
Two gunslingers going at it. And currently, Calgary is a 0.5 favorite, so you might as well give this a pick 'em.
Yeah.
Doug, what are you at first?
Well, I mean, BC's without Lucky Whitehead, but Calgary has. Well, I mean, they're getting better, and man, this is a tough one. Give me one second here.
Flip it a coin.
Calgary.
Okay.
I rolled a dice in order to figure it out. Calgary.
Now, here's the thing. We all know Bo Levi Mitchell's rivalry with the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. You know, if they did those great NFL top 10s, if they had the CFL top 10s, that would be, you know, top 10 rivalries in CFL history. But one of them would be Bo Levi Mitchell versus the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. So what I'm wondering is, you know, Bo's had a rough year, and... But was Saskatchewan more motivation for him than BC will be? BC got pounded into the ground last game by the Blue Bombers. I'm thinking BC. I'm not sure Bo gets up for this game, you know, as much as he does with the Rough Riders.
Yeah, and I'm... Oh my! There's not a bone in my body that will let me take Calgary, so I'm going BC just by default. Ben, I'll let you have the last word.
Yeah, I like BC as well in this game. I still don't think Calgary is as good as a lot of people think, and I expect to be proven wrong when they make the playoffs and somehow win a playoff game on their way. But I think BC's at home. I think they've just shown more that's impressed me. Even in some of the Calgary wins, kind of look at the game, and there's nothing, that really scares me too much in Calgary. Bo Levi Mitchell isn't doing that this year. I know he did look good, but again, like Will said, it's a unique thing when he plays Saskatchewan. I expect BC to win the game.
All right, gentlemen, you have 3 minutes, and you better make it good.
3 minutes, and we're out of here. We got 3 minutes, and we're out. Is this thing on?
Yeah.
Are you hearing it?
All right. Let's see. Well, first of all, let's pork rankings. let's get into the pork ranking, shall we? It was released today. Give me 1 second to pull it up here. There we are. Yeah. So your week 10 pork rankings. All right. So Bombers are still baking as always. They have. Mm-hmm. They've been baking all year. Whether it's bacon or applewood smoked bacon or whatever, they've just been bacon all year. The Argos are up to cottage bacon now. It's a flavorful twist on traditional bacon, made with a meteor cured pork shoulder rather than pork belly. If this didn't fill you up, nothing will. Let's see, moving on. The Owls are up to third. They're pulled pork this week. Stamps are fourth. They're back bacon. The Riders are mid-table. They're Boston butt. If you don't know what
Boston
that is.
Butt.
Yeah. Big old hearty cut of meat above the shoulder blades is where this comes from. And this team needs to start playing above the shoulders.
It's a good no. That's.
Yeah.
Hmm?
Yeah.
The team that we just beat is pork roast. Here's a comment on it. Don't get me wrong. I loves me some pork roast. Let it sit all day in the oven and it'll just break down. But don't wait too long or it'll just fall apart.
There's some surprisingly good analysis in the pork rankings.
Yes. Yeah. That's one thing I've noticed. The analysis in the pork, the person who does the pork rankings does an amazingly good job with this, and I mean with the analysis, it's just amazing.
Yeah.
But now we're getting into the dregs here. So the Lions, who are seventh, they're pork shanks. This comes from the forearm. It's a tough cut because it's just so muscly, but take care. You don't want any of those bone bits in the mix. The Red Blacks are Wiener Schnitzel. Now I would, since I love me a good Wiener Schnitzel, I would be moving that up a little bit.
Well, you must not like it.
That's me personally, but it's like, but here's his analysis is what you do is you take a pork chop and pound it flat over and over until it can take no more. Then add a little breading and oil. Delish.
Yeah, and then we okay. Once again, the analysis is what.
Here's the Edmonton Elves.
The Edmonton Elves. Yeah, but they're obviously not elves that I know of. They're what is known as Hogmaw.
Hogmaw?
Hogmaw. It's pig stomach. Ooh. And if you can't stomach it, you shouldn't have bought Silver Platinum season tickets like I did. Best seat for the worst ball.
Like pig haggis? Is that basically what
this
is?
Yeah, it almost sounds like it, doesn't it?
I don't think they throw the pig heart, lungs, and whatever else they throw in haggis in the stomach and boil it. I don't think they do that, but
they're Scottish people.
But yeah, so those are your pork rankings for week 10. Now, once again, we have to give a lot of kudos to the Argos social media team. These guys have been knocking it out of the park, but
all year long.
So it's weekly kudos to them. But here's something a little interesting. Apparently, there was an image from the game of good old Matt Dunnigan chowing down on a big ass piece of turkey.
Oh, I saw that.
Yep.
Now, Ben, they were serving you guys a full turkey dinner up there, weren't they?
Well, so apparently I didn't go down for it. We were sort of in this little booth that was actually quite nice. And so I just sort of stayed in there. I brought in some food and drinks to start with. But yeah, what I heard is that they'd been carving up that turkey and putting it into little like to-go containers. So yeah, everyone was eating quite well. I had eaten right before I got there because I never know with press box food, with a new press box. And so I didn't want to gamble and go in hungry. But yeah, that's what I gather. But I got to say, when they were setting up that shot, we've got the closed circuit camera that's right in front of us. There was an extreme close-up of that turkey that couldn't have looked more off-putting. There is a point where you can get too close to a turkey.
It was down to the
stuff that you throw in to make a soup.
Yeah.
But let me finish this. So Dunnigan's chowing down on this. Reddit picked up on it and said that this belongs in the Louvre. So what an Argo Supervan, Bill Yu, what he did was he must have taken a Google image or a Google image search of the Mona Lisa. And he superimposed Dunnigan. Shut up, phone. Because it went off as soon as I said Google. So he took the image of Dunnigan chowing down on this big piece of turkey and superimposed it over the Mona Lisa. So it's got the frame and everything. And I'm looking at it and I'm like, this is hilarious. I was laughing at it for a good while.
That's pretty good. I got to check that out. I was initially thinking you were going to say he was replacing Dunnigan as sort of a sculpture of Venus de Milo or Winged Victory or something, but Mona Lisa makes sense.
Yeah, just here's Dunnigan right on top. Let's see. What
else? See, you know what, though? I actually had the Argos rebranded their Twitter account, Boris Beatty Stan account. Now, I finally had a moment of being too old for social media. normally, I'm pretty good with knowing things. I don't always use the terminology, but I understand it. I had to ask my kid what that meant. Yeah, and I discovered that, you know, stan somebody or a stan account is you really love them. So I had my old man moment.
Yeah, I could be wrong on this because I have a lot of old man moments, but I believe it comes out of an Eminem song.
Yep.
About a stalker fan named Stan. I think that's where it originated.
Oh, okay.
That was the big hit. That was the duet he did with Dido. That was a big hit.
Yeah, it was.
Okay.
Yeah. But I had an old man moment on that same Twitter account, not because I didn't know what Stan was. I was just thinking, who's this guy that I'm following? This Boris Beatty fan.
Definitely remember the song. I just never made the connection.
Yeah. According to Urban Dictionary, a stan is when you love someone or something so badly that you are willing to drive your car off a bridge with your pregnant girlfriend in the trunk. That's one of the
driving off the bridge.
Yeah, because that's what happened in the music video.
Yeah.
Dido was pregnant in the music video, so he loved apparently Eminem so much that he threw her in the trunk of his car and drove off a bridge. Because he was so pissed off because he didn't respond to any of his letters.
And he has that tragic hero realization right at the end, although I wouldn't call him a tragic hero, but right at the end, he realizes he has no way to send the tape out.
It's like, oops. Oopsie.
Oh.
Okay. Now, Will and Ben, you guys were at the game.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I noted, our good friend Argo Fluffy, he posted a fan cam from his seat of the final kick through the uprights.
Yeah.
And I noticed that right after it went through, the stadium got deathly quiet.
Yeah, well.
But it's like before everyone was like hooting and hollering. It was just, and I mean, I just loved it. I loved it so much, and I think we all did this. We listened to the fifth quarter after the game because I wanted to hear the meltdown, and oh my god, it was like I was listening to Clyde One Super Scoreboard after a Rangers win in the Old Firm when all the Celtic fans would call in and chime in saying, "Oh, it's a conspiracy. The SFA are all in on it." It's like, yeah, okay, whatever. You guys just suck and you lost.
The whole experience at Tim Hortons Field yesterday was pretty quiet. I mean. Usually if you're at an Argos Ticats game there outside of Labor Day, there isn't as much potential for issues. Mm. And yeah, as I said, like nobody, I walked by myself to the parking lot, in Argo gear with, surrounded by Ticat fans. Nobody said anything. But yeah, I mean, it did get pretty quiet.
I noticed, turned and left. Like right as the field goal went in, because I couldn't tell from my angle. I wasn't watching the monitor very foolishly, and so I was just watching, straight up, and I couldn't see. I knew it had the distance, but that was never going to be an issue. But I couldn't tell. But then I heard just the noise stop. It just sounded like somebody turned off the air conditioner or something. It was like, wait, where did that ambient noise go? It was crickets, and I knew at that moment. Oh, I guess it went in.
but you watch the replay, and Beatty, once he kicks that ball, he raises his hands. He knew.
Oh yeah, I knew it too. I'm like, that's splitting the uprights right. That's gonna just straight through, and it was amazing. But then afterwards, when the Argos showed their fan cam version.
Oh, Adam.
there was an awful lot of bleeps. And I want to hear the uncensored version. I want the uncensored version because I know, post it after midnight one day and then take it down at 5 a.m. I want to know.
Hill. He could DM it to you, but he'll make you sign about 20 different pieces of paper saying you won't make it public.
I wouldn't make it. I swear I wouldn't.
And the other funny.
I swear I wouldn't make it public.
Josh Burton, who I'm not quite sure what his role is, but he's awesome on Twitter.
Yeah, I think he's a video producer.
He posts this video of him he's running. He's coming off the field. He just does this. Just trips on something, and it looks so.
He stuck the landing though.
Poetic, yeah.
He stuck the landing. That was great.
Yeah.
I gave him a 10 for that.
Now, we'd want to do tweets from Kazakhstan?
Yes. 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 I think we'll end it with, we'll end it this week from tweets from the steppes.
Now, I don't know, Ben, if you, do you follow?
I do. They're awesome. Oh, I love that account. I spend a lot more time. It's funny. My Google Translate now is permanently set to to English.
Yeah.
I gotta find a way to get a Kazakh flag before the 30th.
Chandler Worthy had food poisoning.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Argo, he asked, did he eat turkey raw? That was Hamilton's problem.
My favorite of the week was when our PA guy Adam Goss tweeted out a mash of letters.
Yeah.
And he responded, "You know Kazakh?"
I saw Adam after the game, and yeah, Adam had a good time.
I noted that, because I know I tweeted to him, say, "Go home, Goss, you're drunk." Yeah. Let's see that. I just want to see here. There's one. Yeah, because I think one of the best ones was that. Oh, here we go. Yeah, yeah. He did eat the turkey raw. That was Hamilton's problem. Yeah, that was one of my good ones. Yeah, another one.
He called Argo Fluffy a tiger trainer.
Oh, here we go. No, that's not. That one's not that good.
I think the "You Know Kazakh" was my favorite of the week that I saw. Yeah. I laughed out loud, literally, not just the LOL, and takes something to do that for me on Twitter.
Oh, that's the reason why. That's the reason why I didn't see it, because I have three down blocked. Anyway, yeah, there was one other one that I thought was one other one I thought was pretty good. It's it was in response to the website that I don't like. It's just it would be uncomfortable for you to lose Argos at home. Argos ate turkey. They're now ready to eat the Tigers. I thought that was pretty good.
There was another one that he replied to the Toronto Argonauts keys to the game with Bonesy and Hogan. And he said, "Look at these two wonderful people. Here, most people on the radio are ugly, but these two men can marry my sister at any time. They are beautiful and smart, and they know a lot about football. Kazakh wedding is best wedding."
I love it.
Then somebody wrote something, but I don't know because it got deleted. But then so I have no context. And then he replies, "I would be happy if you wrote my voice message. It doesn't matter if I don't have a phone."
Oh, man.
Yeah. Like I said, we love Kazakhstan. We love you.
Oh, well, with that, we can't end on a better note.
Yeah.
Well, Ben, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Ben_Grant, and you can find all my stuff at xsandargos.com.
Will, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter. Everybody, get your tickets for October 30th when we play the BC Lions at 4 p.m. And you can find me at Argo Fans or at www.argofans.com.
Doug, where can they find you?
They can find me on Twitter at DougB519. They can find at the Double Blue Order my group, or rather our group, at Facebook at facebook.com/DoubleBlueOrder, on Twitter at Double Blue Order, on Instagram at the Double Blue Order. We have a new t-shirt out on doubleblueorder.ca. Go get yourself one.
I designed too. I like it. I've ordered myself one.
Yeah, I think it's gonna look it's gonna look great on you, Clay. It's
and
gonna
it look great shipped on you. Already.
Well, see, there you go.
Shipped fast, yeah. So you can find me at All Kinds of Clay on the Twitter and Instagram machines. You can find the Argos Fancast at Argos Fancast, or anywhere you find your friendly neighborhood podcast, just search Argos Fancast. That does it for the Argos Fancast this week. We'll talk to you next week when we're previewing another Argos win. Cheers.